As a suddenly single mom with no job, no money in the bank, no babysitter, and no family close by, I launched a six-figure real estate career. With three boys in diapers, 3 months into home foreclosure, I worked my way out of the toughest time of my life and financial turmoil in 3 hours a day. I'm your host, Sarah Cruz. This show is designed to bring you the best strategies, practices, and tips from top producing agents around the country. Welcome to the 3 Hour Agent. We're here today talking to Brent Conley out of San Diego. Brent has owned many businesses and has been doing real estate for quite a long time. So we're going to interview him and find out his story and what makes Brent tick. How long have you been in the business, Brent?
Hey, Sarah. I have been in the business actually since I was like 8 years old. I was stuffing envelopes. And then I started farming neighborhoods for my dad. My dad owned a brokerage in Huntington Beach, California. And so I kind of started really young. Then life took me to a different direction. And after high school, I went to college. And in college, I got my real estate license and started doing really, really well about age 23. And then it just kind of took off from there. And so full-time since 2003. And I've had a phenomenal career. I've owned a few brokerages now, actually five, and a couple of them have been very successful and a couple of them failed. Right now I'm just an agent at eXp Realty and I'm leading coaching and training and doing real estate.
So when did you start your first brokerage?
2008, started Solutions Real Estate in Phoenix, Arizona.
I think a lot of agents, they're always asking, how did you produce? Like, how did you start building your business full-time when you first started?
So it actually took me, I think, 8 months to sell my first house. I was with Coldwell Banker, Success Realty in Mesa, Arizona, and I had a full-time job and I was going to college, and I didn't really know what I was doing because I didn't have a hands-on mentor and we didn't have all the available information online that we do today. Mm-hmm. So I was just working part-time, trying to figure it out, door knocking and farming neighborhoods. And over the course of that time frame, I was doing open houses and I had some opportunities. And I sold a referral house, a listing. It was my first transaction. It was like $139,000. It was hard work.
Well, did you get buyer leads off of that?
Yeah, but I was pretty young and I had a really, really big baby face, right? So my face is you know, kind of a baby face still to this day. But back then I looked really young. And so nobody wanted to really hire me at that time.
Right. You had to prove yourself.
Yeah. And to top it off, I was working the retirement communities and I didn't know anything. And so I knew it was retirement community, but I didn't realize I should have been working a younger demographic to build a little bit of camaraderie and it would have been an easier transition.
So what would you tell an agent now if they're trying to get started and they
just
look young?
Asking for help, ask for advice, find some great mentors who have done it. And they're not just sitting there telling you, oh yeah, go do any open house. Because that's what the leadership told me, just go do any open house. And that wasn't really the right advice. I think the right advice would have been, hey, let's target market and put you in the environment that you're going to succeed at. And some of that was overlooked.
Yeah, I would say, because I was told the same thing, but I found the sweet spot in the $200,000 range. That's people didn't have agents. So it was worth doing the open houses. But if you did them in the higher ranges, you could get leads, but they more likely had an agent already.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. What's another thing you would tell an agent who's just getting started? What would you tell them to do to make them look like an expert?
I think joining a team in this environment is probably the right thing to do and not look at the commission split. I think we possibly have, as a brand new agent, would have one or two pocket deals that year and know that we're going to get some type of commission. And most agents look at like, well, I want 100% of this commission because it's their only transaction that they know they're going to have. And I think that's the wrong way to take a look at this business. I think you've got to look at it as, okay, how can I do 10 to 15 transactions this year and not just focus on this one. It's going to be more work and less money, but it's going to be a faster learning curve in order for you to succeed full time in the real estate business.
That's a really good point, because I refuse to be on a team, but I probably would have started making money faster, quicker.
Oh, for sure. And the learning curve too is mm-hmm. just going to be so much better. You're going to be more comfortable in the real estate transactions in a year from now than you are on the first day, because you've done X amount of deals and you just didn't just do one deal.
If somebody was looking to be on a team, what would you tell them to look for in a team?
I think it's hands-on leadership. And I think it is, what are you going to learn? What are you going to take away when it's your time to go away from the team? And it's not just all about leads. Yes, you want the leads. You want to be able to make money and stay in this business. But I think the leadership is really, really important, and it's overlooked a lot of the times. I think that a lot of times that people are just looking at the financial aspect of it versus, hey, I'm going to learn this new skill. And maybe it's calling FSBOs or calling expireds, or maybe it's how to communicate with a seller during a listing presentation and then servicing the listing after. And I think those are the specific skills that agents need to be learning. And just view this as a career, not as a job, and know that it's going to take a lot of time and it's going to take a lot of effort on your part in order to make the money. And the money will come in a year or two, but at the first year in the business, just try to learn everything you can.
So you grew up in California, went to school in Arizona, moved back to California.
Yep.
Started a family.
Yep.
I know you've had businesses in Arizona too, right?
Yes. So I've owned multiple businesses. I owned a trucking company. I owned a logistics brokerage. I've owned real estate brokerages. I've owned property management companies. I've owned independent consulting companies. And so there's a whole variety of things. And I just really enjoy real estate. You know, I love the hunt. I love to find the deal. And find the deal, put the deal together, negotiate it. And then, you know, on closing day, everybody's really excited because they're getting what they want out of the transaction. And all of those things are really fun for me. What I don't like is I don't really like doing the paperwork. I don't like keeping track of the dates. So I have really good people around me in order to make sure that I'm not missing anything.
Explain to us how things are different between 2008 and now and growing your business and what tools are provided now. Technology.
You know, I think the longer I stay into this business, and I've known this for a long time, but I'll share it with you today, is it's really about mindset. Mm-hmm. Any market, there's buyers and sellers that have to do something, right? Their lease is ending, so they're going to have to buy. There's a tax benefit for them to purchase. They want stability for their family. They want a specific location so they don't have to travel very far for work. There's a financial aspect of it, of building equity over a long period of time. With the interest rates being so low, it's even better. You know, those are all the reasons to buy. And those existed in 2008. Now, the reasons to sell, you've got, as of today, you've got 4 million plus homes in a forbearance situation nationwide. I don't know the numbers in Houston. I don't know the numbers really in San Diego of how many people are actually in forbearance, but you have 4 million people. There's going to be 4 million homes sold 2020. Okay. I think last year we did almost 5 million nationwide in the marketplace that were actually sold. And so I still think the market is still going to produce somewhere right around that 4 million mark nationwide. And that tells you that there's a definite need and there's a definite desire to buy and sell real estate for people above and beyond just the necessity. Mm-hmm. If it just to keep it simple for everybody, there's always a necessity to buy and sell homes. And I think that it's really mindset. And the difference is are you affected and is it affecting your mindset daily? And can you push that away for 4 or 5 hours to do what you need to do in order to communicate with buyers and sellers, or people in general, to get them to become buyers and sellers and working with you? And so in any market, I don't care how bad the market was or is, it's still a good time to move forward and try to find those buyers and sellers.
What could a new agent use today to build their business? Obviously, it's like, and I am first to admit I used to have a horrible mindset. It took me a while to get out of it. I'm still working on it daily to get out of it. But I finally found that people think that I provide enough value and they trust me and they feel like I'm experienced. But name three things that a new agent could use these days, today, to build their real estate business. What could they get started now and do?
I think today is an interesting environment for trying to market and try to build the relationships because people are at home, right? I think they're longing for human interaction. And I think they're tired of Zoom. And it's going to stay that way for a little bit. But I think, you know, any excuse here as these stay-at-home orders lift, I think the people are going to want to be going to lunch with people or going to dinner or going to social gatherings. And even if you are social distancing, they still want to see people. They want to communicate. We're human beings and we want to have that camaraderie and that human connection. And I think that's not going away. And so if you can structure your business and structure your activities and into communicating with people and hanging out with them and doing sports events and your daily lives and your daily routines and incorporate people with that, you're gonna win on building your database. And that is the foundation of everybody's business, is their core database. And maybe it's 100 people, maybe it's 50 people, but that's a start. And as you start and as you add people daily, you're gonna succeed over the long period of time if you communicate properly. So that's number one. Number two, I think Facebook ads and Facebook groups, I'm going to combine those two, are still producing pretty good results. You have an opportunity on Facebook to build your own community and build your own Facebook group. And that could be in your specific neighborhood that you live in. Maybe you're into water skiing, maybe you're into snowboarding, maybe you're into, you know, reading books and sharing good books with other people. Those are community things that can be done while you're social distancing. And those are really, really important because you kind of get to know people from that. And then you'll go in the future to meet them in person and build that relationship. But I think there's opportunity for all agents to start building those communities themselves, and they can do that from their living room, which is fantastic. So that's number two. Number three, I think it's like learning a new skill that you're afraid of, right? And like Zoom or doing video interviews and being on camera. Like, I don't really like it. It's not my thing. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm not 100% scared of it. I don't really want to be on video, but I'm willing to do it for my business. I'm willing to do it to grow as a human and to grow into the future, because this is going to be very, very common in the future. And so do something that is going to add to your toolbox and create a new skill or a new opportunity for you to utilize in the markets that are coming. Because I think the market is still going to be good this year. Next year, who knows? And if we go into a defaulted market, if we go into a stagnant market, there's still going to be buyers and sellers. But could you utilize a skill of getting price reductions on expired listings? And you started now and you have a whole year of experience, and maybe you didn't win for a whole year, but that year of experience is going to allow you to win when it becomes your time. And I think just adding something like that, a new skill, will really increase your chances of staying in the business long term. And I always think everybody should go after listings. And my saying is list to last. I've always believed strongly in that, because you control the market. You have an employment contract. And in a market that's kind of crazy, that's shifting, I think that focusing on first-time home buyers, focusing on veterans that don't have a house now, that they're not building wealth now. And I think those two markets representing buyers is a really good market to start going after.
From your perspective, how would a new agent go after expired listings?
Okay, so I believe that expired listings are low-hanging fruit. They've already raised their hand, right? they said, hey, I am expired. I tried to sell my house. My agent failed me or I failed me, right? And let me talk to you a little bit about that. The agent, how the agent fails them is maybe they weren't a strong enough agent to handle the client and get the price at a price that the property would sell, mm-hmm. okay? And so now if there is a expired listing that was priced right and it had terrible photography and maybe the description was poor, they didn't put any effort into the description of the property, and they took the photography with their iPhone, and it was an old model iPhone, and it just doesn't look right. That will cause a home to expire. Okay, that also is a bad agent because they didn't manage that sales process. Okay, your first open house is online, and that's through taking them on a tour through the photography, through the virtual tours, through the walking tours of, you know, the agent walking through there with a video camera. And some of those can be iPhones. Some of them cannot be if you're gonna properly represent the property. And the description, they can say 3-bedroom, two bathroom house in Houston, and it's a great location. That technically is a allowed or allowable description for a property. It doesn't make me compelled to go see the property. If you combine that with a poor photography setup, then it's a failure. It's just a failure right off the get-go. So the days on market will climb, and it could be priced well. So you take a professional real estate agent that understands photography and how important it is. They understand the description. They actually spend time in the property. They understand the property. They understand the desire from the seller and of saying, hey, I want to sell this house. I'd like to maximize my dollars. What should I do to set this thing up for success? And so you could bring staging in and all that. All of that will contribute to the photography. But let's talk about on the other side of it, that the seller overpriced the home and the agent allowed it. One, it's a bad agent. Two, the seller knew better, but they're allowing the mindset of my house is worth more than everybody else's because it's my house, right? That happens a lot. And it takes a strong agent to handle them. There's a lot of agents out there that are not as strong as they should be. And they're not telling the truth to sellers. So therefore, their house sits on the market for a very long time and ends up expiring. So because they raised their hand, right? Now, I think it's an opportunity that it expired for you to go visit them, to send them a FedEx envelope that says, hey, I've analyzed the property. I think I can sell the property. I've got a marketing strategy that I'd like to talk to you about. When would be a good time for me to come over? And so a lot of times you're going to get hung up on. There's a lot of scripts out there that work, and there's a lot of scripts out there that don't work, but whatever you're comfortable with is fine. And I think it's going after that over and over and over again. You're going to develop strength to go after any listing out there because those are pretty hard. And you're going to develop the expertise in that niche that will produce results. So it takes a little bit of time, it takes a little bit of effort and courage to go calling and knocking on those doors, but they've already raised their hand, they have a desire to move, otherwise they're not gonna go through all that stuff to sell their property. And that's what makes it winning fruit.
Right, so it's somebody finding their niche.
Yes.
Going after it and becoming the expert in that one area. So an agent, let's go back to the agent allowing a seller to overprice the property, because I allow sellers to overprice their property, but yeah. I tell them what the market looks like, and I'm fully transparent about everything, but I rather have that sign in the yard. So I let them, and then I mentally prepare them that this is what's going to
happen. That's totally fine strategy. I understand it. That happens a lot in San Diego. I mean, we just took one for 500. It's worth 479. And I think that, but we gave them the facts up front, right? And we told them, hey, this is where it's going to sell at. We can try for 500. It's not going to happen, right? I'm pretty stern on that. But the person that is confident that their house is going to sell for 500, with the comps, tell a different story. And mm-hmm. So I've already got it in their head. Hey, 30 days, we've got to drop this price, and it could cost you another $5,000 or $10,000. Because depending on the market fluctuations, right now we're still at low inventory, so they think they can get away with it, and they might be able to, but I don't think it's going to sell at 500. So is that one an overpriced listing? Yes. Would I allow it to expire at 90 days or 120 days? I'm not going to have the listing that long. I'm either going to get my price at 30 days that will cause the house to sell, or I'm going to part ways. So I'm fine with testing the market, but the strength has to come in. Manage the property correctly, manage the listing process correctly, so it actually can become a sellable listing.
What made you go from individual agent to owning a brokerage?
You know what? I was at Keller Williams Realty, and I had a good friend at the time that had a team, and I was an individual agent doing, I think, about $6-7 million a year. And, actually, we started looking because the office, and I was part of the ALC, the office wasn't putting money into the office to clean up the property. And we were paying pretty high fees at the time. And so they asked us and wouldn't do it. And so finally they got it approved, and it was like $2,000, and they were going to buy paint and do some other stuff. And then the office was going to paint the office. And it just kind of put a bad taste in my mouth of saying, well, why are they having us paint it versus hiring contractors to do it? Because they were trying to save money to protect the profit sharing. And I just thought it was a little strange. Here I am paying extraordinary amount of money into the company, and they weren't going to do this for these top agents, you know, to have a nice place. I was renting an office at the place, paying $300 or $400 a month as well. And there was just some issues with that. So at the end of the day, I think my buddy said, you know, what if we opened our own company? We started putting it together, and we kind of just wanted to do it better and say, hey, this is how we want to be treated as agents. This is how we're going to treat our agents. Let's just go start our own brokerage. And so that's what we did. And it started out with 8 agents, and we quickly grew to 50. Then we grew to 100. And then we ended up growing to 320 in Phoenix and 100 in California, under the Solutions Real Estate brand. And it was pretty successful. Yeah, it was just wanted to do it better. So a little bit ego, a little bit of just wanted a little bit more control. And we wanted to be around like-minded agents that wanted to grow. That took us, I guess we owned that brokerage for about 10 to 11 years or so. Mm-hmm. About year 8, I want to say, maybe year 7, we sold the Phoenix operation to Century 21, and I kept California. All the work kind of dumped on me because we lost the mothership, accounting and brokers and all the support and all that stuff. And it kind of, you know, lost a little bit of where I wanted to go and how I wanted to proceed. And so then I was hanging out with some friends of mine in Scottsdale, Arizona. And they were at eXp Realty, and they were kind of telling me what was going on about it. And I've been paying attention to the company for a while. And so I ended up joining eXp Realty. I gave Solutions Real Estate to my wife and said, hey, you run this company. I'm going to check out this thing, because I kind of lost my passion for doing the brokerage. And that's how I ended up switching to eXp Realty with Mike Bjorkman and David Golden. And it's been a fantastic ride since. And I love this new company. You know, I don't think I'm ever going to any other brokerage ever again.
Do you feel like a weight was lifted off your shoulders once you went from the brokerage scene to eXp?
Yeah, a little bit. I think a weight is, and I am about multiple streams of income, and I don't like the risk. I don't like the liability that comes with owning a brokerage and the amount of time it actually takes away from your day to do broker involved things owning a brokerage. And that's whether it's cutting checks or finding new space to lease and keeping agents happy and doing all the stuff. EXP just solved the whole back office issue for somebody like myself, that I do believe in the multiple streams. So they pay me to help coach, lead, and train agents and attract agents. And that is what I love to do. And so with that, I get all the good stuff and I let them do all the bad stuff. Right. So there's all the back office and accounting and all those nightmares that I don't have anymore. So as far as a big weight, yes, but there's huge opportunity. The camaraderie at this new company is fantastic. The culture's amazing. And there's just, the sky's the limit for this company, because I think that they're just in a stage of building, and they're at 29,000 agents now. Four and a half years ago, they were at 300 agents. It's the fastest growing brokerage in the world, and it's under one flag. It's not a franchise. It's an agent-owned company, because every agent that closes their first transaction with eXp Realty gets stock. And so now 29,000 agents that close the transaction, they all are stock owners of the company. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. So now we're building wealth in a different way. It's contributing to the household wealth. And over the next 10 years, I believe this company is going to go to 400,000 real estate agents. So there's plenty of opportunity still. And I think it's going to produce some really, really phenomenal opportunities here in the next few years for people that are just getting in this year. And they're going to be excited about the business. They're going to be excited about helping grow the business. And in 4 or 5 years, I think there's a huge amount of agents that are going to have $100,000 or $200,000 worth of their stock, and because the company's giving it back to them.
Right. And I don't think there's a one size fits all. I know that it's already opened up opportunities for me. You know, I was a solo agent at a brokerage, and I joined when I could, because like I've been in it 6 months and I already have stock. The opportunities that it's going to bring me as I work towards certain things, certain goals, I mean, no other brokerage can do that for me.
No. And the power of the stock is on the NASDAQ. I think it's $8 or $10 a share or something like that. And as this company goes to 50 and 75 and 100,000, 150,000 real estate agents, that stock is going to double and triple. And I believe that is going to be huge power and an incentive for anybody that's actually at the company now and coming to the company over the next year. They're going to make money off of that stock. And I just full-heartedly believe that.
Let's compare your life before, because this time is going down in history and we want to document it. So we have coronavirus, and it's probably been around 60 to 90 days at this point. What did your life look like before, your work life? And let's compare it to what it looks like now and what it's going to look like for the next 3 months.
You know what? I would say, you know, there's a movie that said, freedom! And I'm looking forward to freedom, right? This thing drives me nuts. Mm-hmm. The fact is, the stats came out today in San Diego that there was 6 deaths out of, I forgot the population in San Diego off the top of my head. I just saw it earlier today, of millions of people that were 100% coronavirus. And so they've shut down. I've got friends losing businesses. There's restaurants that are never going to reopen. This has really tormented the economy, and it's really unfortunate, and it should have been somewhat avoided. So I'm kind of sad in that aspect of it. The good news of it for me is I got to spend 10 days in Glamis driving dune buggies with my son. So I've taken some time off. That was our social distancing because nobody was out there. That was fantastic. And then I came back and I went to work because I had to close a bunch of transactions. Fortunately, I only lost a couple $100,000, and that was a good thing because I didn't lose $400,000. I know. So that's a benefit. And then now we're starting to build more and more buyers and sellers. They're starting to come out of the woodwork. So the next 90 days, I think it's work. I may take 4 or 5 days off or something, do a quick vacation. But at the end of the day, that I'm excited about the real estate market today. And I'm excited about the opportunities that are coming. And there's just a lot of good things that are going to happen. And they're starting to happen daily as we start opening up the city. And other than that, it's business as usual. I can't wait till schools open here in the fall. So we're not the kids' teachers.
Yeah, you're telling me. So what do you think some of those opportunities are that are going to open up?
I think panic selling. I think there's people out there that are going to make some mistakes and sell their properties way too low, depending on if they can afford it or not. I think that there's some properties that are going to come up on the market that are going to sell for full price and market value, and that are going to be really good properties for the new buyer that just aren't the right properties for the seller. And those present pretty good opportunities. So I'm looking myself for some of those. And hey, if I can upgrade my house during this time frame, I would do it in a heartbeat. I have no problems with buying right now. I think we're close to the top of the market, but this is for my own personal residence. It's not for, I'm okay with, you know, getting a 3% interest rate. So that's my motivation behind buying right now. It would be a long-term scenario. But I think the other opportunity is, you know, change is good. I think it's good that we have tough days, because it's going to make us appreciate the really good days, especially in real estate. There's agents that have only seen a really good market for 7 or 8 years now. And it's going to cause them to level up and increase their skill, increase their professionalism. It's going to increase the care for the client, because the competition is going to get stronger, and there's going to be agents that are going to fall out of the business. So I'm not sad about that, because the professionalism will rise up, and there's going to be more business available for the professional. It's not going to be easy. It's just going to be work, but it's exciting. So I see a lot of opportunity that way.
Okay. So I'm forecasting that we're going to have a ton of inventory come up, because people are going to need to sell because they've lost their job or they've lost their small business. What would you tell an agent that, you know, I like to come from a place of value, mm-hmm. and I want to help these people, but we can't give a bunch of discounts. So what would you tell an agent to tell a seller that is needing to sell their home out of financial desperation and asking for a discount?
I think it's in the presentation. Just because somebody needs a break on commissions does not mean that it should be given, or it doesn't mean that it's deserved, because some of these transactions are very, very complicated. And they really deserve a professional charging a full commission. And you need a negotiator, because even though you're saving the commission, if that agent doesn't care, and this is what sellers don't understand, if that agent is just trying to go through the motions just to get a paycheck, and they're not representing the seller properly, you're going to lose more than 1%. You're going to lose more than 2%. It's because they're just going to put the deal together to sell the property and move on to the next client. And that's the hardest thing to communicate with a seller today, because there is commission compressions, because the competition has been out there pretty heavy, but it's because the business has been and the agents have not been trained how to negotiate, how to navigate through some of these challenges and really, you know, professionally represent a client. It's just been easy, the easy train of real estate. And so that is going away. I would really look at as your value proposition and saying, hey, what value do I bring? How can I get these people as much money as possible for their listing?
Right.
How do I lower their stress level and get them onto the new place that is going to be acceptable, and it's going to maybe make them a little bit happier than they are today? And that's my job as a real estate agent. The job isn't necessarily to make everybody happy, because happy means winning the lottery to some people, right? And some people is like, hey, just solve the problem for me. and I'm willing to pay full price to do that.
Right.
And so like I'm taking 7% listings. I just pitched an 8% land listing here the other day. I don't work for free, because if they want my full undivided attention, then it's deserving of a full commission when that property closes. And that's one thing that the sellers don't understand these days, and a lot of agents don't understand. You're working for free until that property successfully closes. You have to gauge of how much time, effort, and energy that you're going to spend on a property that is overpriced. Let's take that example, as I said earlier, right? If it's going to expire, then guess what? The seller didn't get what they wanted. They wanted their property sold. And they were going to pay 1% or a 0.5% commission. That's why it expired. You didn't hire the right agent for the job of selling your home. You hired the discount agent. So I think there's a big discrepancy out there, and there's a big, you know, communication gap between sellers and possible listing agents or agents in general that are not properly explaining, showing, showcasing, and really performing a level of service that the sellers deserve when they're paying a full commission.
I love that explanation. That was good. Was there a certain mentor or a certain agent or broker that you really, that played as a mentor or that you watched and motivated you to where you are now? Who would that be?
I got a couple, and I would say, I'd probably say the biggest motivator out there for me was Mike Ferry. And not so much as I learned scripts and dialogues and how to sell from Mike Ferry, even though I sold other things in the past. I had a system. I learned a system from Mike Ferry. Prior to that, I would say my dad taught me that I have to ask for the order. Asking for the order, you know, is the way to go, because if you don't ask, you don't receive. And then I'd probably say my grandfather, as somebody that really instilled integrity and honesty with me of, hey, if you're going to treat people the way you want to be treated, they're going to really appeal to that. And I think that is a foundation that was laid a long, long time ago. And, you know, all of those people were real estate agents at one point. I also hear recently, about 4 years ago, I want to say, John Cheplak really helped me see a different viewpoint and bring in what I needed in the business. And, you know, part of it was video, part of it was marketing things, part of it was getting me through some tough, challenging times and really kind of seeing a different perspective. And I'm a type of person that just goes, never surrender. And kind of taught me how to surrender a couple times and really helped launch me to another level that I didn't think was really possible. And that's pretty exciting. And so that's, you know, it wasn't part of my personality, and it really, I gained a lot of perspective. And so I would say those four mentors are pretty important in my life.
I love that. I'm all about being super efficient with time. That's how I grew my business. So I wanted to see how do you time block? What are your most efficient money-making activities, and how do you implement those into your day?
Okay, so I'm a slacker. There, I said it. I'm guilty of being a slacker. So I say that because I'm not very punctual on a clock. And I am trying to get better at that. And it's very difficult, but I'm getting better at it. It's one of my things that I've been working on for quite some time. So I'm actually using a calendar now, which is first time for a long, long time. But I do like routines. So when I was calling expireds and early on in my career, I'd call it 7 a.m. Now you have to call it 8, but you know, when I was doing it consistently, I would call it 7 a.m. every single morning. And so also, I go to bed and I wake up thinking, how do I get a buyer in the car? How do I get a listing appointment? Or how do I get a contract signed today? And that right there if you do that day in and day out of how do I get a deal today, somebody willing to sign a contract today, willing to get in the car to go look at real estate today, that's going to produce a tremendous amount of results for agents. And I think that's it. You know, I don't know if you really have to be following a schedule every single day. I think it's highly advisable to do so, because what's on your schedule will happen, and without it, you're just going to slack off. And so I'm getting better at that. So if you're not highly motivated every single day to go do this business, then you better start using a schedule so you can visualize it. But in my mind every day, I'm like, okay, who do I need to talk to? Let's go. And I'm excited about the business. I don't have to necessarily be regimented on that. I just, if I have a deadline, I give myself a deadline, it's in my head until I get it done. For my thought process, how do I get a buyer or seller today? And then if that's the only thought in your mind, you're going to start working on that and try to find the fastest way to do that.
Okay. Well, I appreciate all the information. If anybody wants to reach out and ask you questions, what's the best way to contact you, Brent Conley?
They could probably find me on LinkedIn, and Brent Conley, BrentConley, and reach out that way. And I'd probably, you know, respond to that. I get messages all the time off of that. Just keep going. Don't give up. It's a phenomenal market.